scientific computing language. The reason I believe it will is threefold. One is the technical reasons is that it ought to be possible to build as efficient compilers for Java as for Fortran, because Java has simple arrays, it has no pointers, and also, although the if you use objects in Java, you're going to exhibit some overhead. However, the numerically intensive parts can be written with simple types, and those can be optimized by compilers. It ought to be possible to build as efficient compilers as you can for Fortran and Fortran 90. And I guess it has two critical additional features that Fortran doesn't have. It has object-oriented features, which I think are relatively obviously good ideas. Fortran 90 has some object-oriented features, but I believe them to be clumsier than those in Java. And perhaps the most important feature Java has is that it's linked automatically to the web. That is, I believe, one of the reasons it is the Java is the natural first programming language that you teach people, because when you teach somebody Fortran, at least, or C, the standard Hello World applications, you print it out and you get some piece of paper saying Hello World, whereas in Java you get some nifty applet saying Hello World, or something interesting. So Java is a much more social language than Fortran, and a much more appealing language, especially for beginners, because the answer is graphical. The natural output is graphical. And also that graphical output can be shared with the people's peers. So as a sort of a one of the personal reasons that I like web technology is that it actually allows me to discuss what I do with my family, in particular my children. And my 12-year-old daughter wants two things for Christmas. She wants a Java class. She also wants a Perl class, actually, but she mainly wants a Java class, and she wants a chat room. She wants to have her own chat room. And so I believe that kids from her generation, at least the ones having access to the internet, will grow up knowing Java, because that's what they see on the web, and I believe that somehow they'll learn it. So I'm currently trying to take my university courses on Java and modify them for the K-12 so that I can deliver on this Christmas present and for my daughter, and I see that certainly compared to other languages, it is more attractive because its graphics is unfortunately not fully interpreted. It would be much easier to teach if it was fully interpreted. And I believe there's going to have to be versions of Java which are fully interpreted. We'll discuss JavaScript, which is fully interpreted, but it ain't Java. But in any case, I think after all these little details are sorted out, children will come to university knowing Java, and they will not learn Fortran. They will rebel. And so we will want to use Java as our scientific computing language. Next file. Let me skip those. I have a performance slide. Alright, so we can discuss the performance issue. So you point out that Java, there is actually a foil later on about the performance of Java. So currently, of course, when you do Java, alright, let me just come back to that. I have a foil and a few things telling you why the performance isn't a problem. Alright, so here's a typical example. So Java can do lots of things. Michael Chang, underusing his capabilities by clicking a button here, built this so-called visible human applet, which, did you get your Sun workstation?
I sell it.
Sell it. All right. So he was awarded by Sun. He won a prize at the Java Cup for this in When was that? When was that this year? March?
May.
May? All right. So in May, this particular app that won a prize in the as the, one of the best educational applets using Java, and it illustrates some of the capabilities of Java, namely, this is, you can get through, it has the abilities to move cursors through customized front pages, and then, I mean, customize interfaces, and then display, in this case here, slices from the Federal Visible Human Database. So this is Java as a user interface. So that's one type of application of Java. Next file. So scan, put brown this. So this is another one Michael built, which is his Rubik's Cube written using Java. So this shows you how Java can be used to build PC games. Children's games. So another student of mine, if any of you have children, you may know the children's game called TidPix, which allows you to build images. So I'm going to base my Java class for kids around a Java version of that PC system called TidPix, so that they can see how they can actually see how they can use this language to do interesting imaging applications. So those between them illustrate, so here you actually are doing some computing, you're doing some, this particular thing rotates, etc. If you want, we can hook into to internet and see it, do it for real in the break if you want. Next file. All right, so let's skip over that. This is collaboration. So probably the most important application of Java at this moment in time is collaboration technologies, and I'll discuss that later on. Let's just skip over to the next few. Well, let's do that after when I tell you 52, but skip it just a minute. So this one here is a little applet, which actually effectively is a Java implementation of an image processing application, which was also done using ABS. We basically ported an ABS image processing application to Java. So that's another type of thing to do. Next, press that 52. All right. So, how many people here know Java, reasonably familiar with Java? Not many. All right, so. All right, so I will go through these foils then. All right. So so this is what I told you don't want to do. This is a so-called Java application, which does produce a printout. So this is your favorite Hello World application using the println method with an argument called Hello World. And apart from that, there is very little different. I mean, Java is very similar to C or C++. Next file. All right, so this is a more useful Hello World version, illustrating how you would build a simple applet that say hello world on the screen, and you define an applet which is a child of the basic applet class. That basic applet class has a bunch of predefined methods. One of the most basic is the so-called paint method, which draws the Java frame buffer. That is always called with an argument which is of the class graphics, and that particular class has a method called drawString. If you hand that method sizing positioning information and a text, it will produce hello world on the screen. And because we want to tell the Java compiler that we are using something from the graphics class, we have to import the graphics class in the beginning. So that is the world's simplest Hello World program in Java, it is, you do have to know all this stuff about which classes exist, but one of the, I mentioned the sad commentary about the difference between Java and Perl in terms of books. The other remarkable thing about Java is the amazing online resources that are available for the language. If you can get, either on the CD-ROMs, which are at the back of any one of these Java books, or if you go to standard websites, you can see some beautiful hyperlinked resources which tell you about all the classes and all the methods and what they do, etc. It's got a remarkable, there is electronically, Java's, in my opinion, clearly the best documented language with the best tutorials and the best examples available. So the ability to learn Java is, I believe, much easier than those of other languages because of this wealth of information, both in the form of books and in the forms of electronically, either through CD-ROMs or the web. Next file. Okay. So obviously, if you when you built this applet, you'd have to put it in a suitable directory, and then you would add to your HTML essentially an instruction to grab that particular class, the Hello World class, and place it in this particular part of the HTML page. So Java has pretty easy to incorporate into standard HTML pages. The applet tag has also defines the size of the window on the screen. Next file. All right. So Java comes with a pretty good set of graphics capabilities, and as I mentioned, and also has some excellent image processing capabilities. Things you can do very simply are changing fonts and colors. Next file. So if I wanted to make my applet look differently, I could define a font, which in this case is Times Roman, bold, 36 point size. I can use the sent font method on my graphic object G. Sent font is defined already it's a part of the ordinary Java library. So that's what you find out about by one of these hyperlinked, by reading a book or from one of these hyperlinked resources. So you just hand that method the new font. You can also change the color, in this case to make it red, and then you just use the drawstring method again to display it. Next. So this is an amusing foil. You'll have to scan it gradually. All right, so this comes from Gosling from a while ago, and it's his comparison of Java with other languages. Now, of course, Fortran doesn't enter Gosling's worldview, but it does, C and C++ do. The only thing to notice is that red is good, and yellow is fair, and black is poor. You will notice a reasonably large number of blacks in the C and C++ column and a bunch of reds in the Java column. So Gosling says Java has good performance. Simple, it's object-oriented, it's robust, it's secure, it's interpreted, it's dynamic, it's portable, it's architectural neutral, it supports threads, it has intrinsic garbage corrections and handles exceptions. And actually, Tickle, Perl, and Smalltalk come out sort of okay, but the other language, done. Next file. All right. So you mentioned the performance. So here is the performance of Java, which was done, this must have been done, this is probably done 6 months ago. And here's my SGI, running, this comes from Jack Dongambagar, it's running Linpack, and it's running at, my SGI runs at 0.5 megaflops, and at that time this was done, the best performance was, I think, a digital alpha running at a little over a megaflop, and that's about a factor of 50 slower, 50 to 100 slower than the best Fortran or C compilers, showing that the performance of Java is dreadful. Next file. What is happening here? You have to wait here. It's trundling off to MPEG for this file. Now, you don't have this file, and you probably can't read this one, can you? I have a handout which I can give you on this, but you just gave me this as a real foil, didn't you? You gave me Michael's things? No. This was not the right one. Is this what you gave me, this one? I'll tell you in the second session where to get all this information from. Yeah, why don't you give me the overhead projector? I knew this. These particular foils don't work properly. What? Is that right? Well, trouble is I can't even find this one. Now here it is. Right, let's just do this. Well, you see, this technology is of course so much better than the screen technology. We don't even have to work out how to switch the screen off. So we can now beat up this stupid electronic technology and go back to some decent technology here. So up this file. Points out, this comes from Wojtek Fomanski, who from MPEG, and he is actually building this thing called Webflow, we'll discuss later, which is the essentially a sophisticated AVS-like system to do data flow computing on the web. So one of the key technologies which has just become available is a set of web servers built in Java. And there are several types of web servers built in Java. We'll see later on when we do collaboration, there's one Habanero, there's one thing MPEG built called Tango, which are specialized collaboration servers. But there are also general purpose servers, which are the two best known at the moment. They're called Jigsaw and Jeeves. Jigsaw comes from MIT. And yeah, I believe that all that one needs to know is that one would expect that a sort of universal Java environment will soon become available where you already have Java clients or Java apps built in non-Java clients. By the way, it's generally expected that Netscape is rebuilding their browser in Java. And I believe they have to do that to be competitive, because otherwise they can't take advantage of many of the ongoing things going on in the web. So actually, there's some lots of quite interesting features of Java servers in that I already will mention later on this thing, say, called JDBC, the Java Database Connection, which is a universal interface agreed to, I think, well, I seem to remember, over 20 database vendors and Java. So there are a set of Java methods that access databases in a uniform fashion. There's an interesting technology which I think has some relevance for libraries in HPCC, namely something called servlets. So applets, although we didn't really discuss them in detail, allow you to download code on demand to clients. Servlets allow you to do the same thing for servers. So applets and servlets seem to me have some interesting applications to the software community for libraries, because that's sort of what a library is. It's some software on demand. So this allows you to build very stripped down systems and just add capabilities as you need, which is of course what you want to do with libraries. So these servers, which are Jigsaw is the only one I even have any vague familiarity. Jeeves comes to me, the JavaSoft or SunSoft, I always get them confused. Jigsaw is 30,000 lines of Java. So that says that even though this language only got properly defined sort of in January, you have some pretty sophisticated applications out there. So you can expect to see some, quite important changes in the infrastructure of the web based on these, on the use of Java in a more general fashion. Next one. So you pointed out, you said, "Oh, look, dismal after that." Never mind. See, the advantage of this technology is that for me to keep track of all these foils causes me great pain, whereas it's much easier for me to stick it on electronically and deliver it in this fashion. But anyway, never mind. All right. So. All right, so let's discuss the performance of Java. So, as we pointed out in that rather washed-out screen dump from the Limpack Java benchmark, which there is a URL, this is in, I believe, in your handout, that we're off a factor of 50. So there are two things we can do to get back the factor of 50. The first thing we must notice is how Java is implemented. So the way Java is implemented today is you run something called the Java compiler. That produces essentially a universal machine code. There's a thing called the Java virtual machine, which is basically a universal machine code. So when you take a .java file written in ASCII text as Java, that is compiled to a .class file, which is this universal machine code, which is then downloaded, and then it runs on any client. So the reason we have universal machine code is to make it universal. You can then run Java on any system that has built into it a Java interpreter, which takes this universal machine code and converts it to the native machine code for that computer. Now there's some nifty technology which comes from the computer science community and studying interpreters called a just-in-time compiler. So I'm not a great expert in that area. My belief is that what a just-in-time compiler does is the following. It notices, we have two choices. Here we have Limpack. Remember, Limpack is a loop. So it's originally in this universal machine code. We could, every time we went through the loop, interpret this universal machine code, make the real machine code, and then execute it. Alternatively, we could interpret the machine code the first time we go through the loop, stick it away somewhere in a cache, and then reuse the native machine code the next time through the loop. So that's what roughly, I believe, what a just-in-time compiler is. It does compilation on the fly, and it reuses that compilation. So using a just-in-time compiler on Limpack gives you something like a factor of 10 to 20 performance increase. So a huge increase. You'd expect Limpack or any iterative application to gain the most from this technology. We have an example at MPAC. Merrick has a video decoder written in Java. And The there, the just-in-time compiler from Microsoft, which is by far the best just-in-time compiler, is only 4 times slower than the original C code. So that's quite impressive. So this is still interpreted, it's still Java, and yet it's only off a factor of 4 from the original excellent C code, isn't that right? But it's almost certainly iterative. So again, it's iterative. All right. So, however, there is no reason why you cannot view Java as an ordinary language. You do not have to produce universal machine code and interpret it. You can produce real machine code. So there's a perfectly reasonable concept called a native Java compiler, which takes your favorite machine, it takes .java files and produces .optimized machine code files and just runs them. And now you have, of course, a disadvantage. It's not universal because it's the compiler for your current machine. But that's true of Fortran or C++ or C. Obviously, you tend to have a compiler for each machine. So Java has the advantage that it can be used in two ways. What you would call semi-interpreted. This first way, the universal machine code, is not fully interpreted because you have to run it in two stages. You go from .java to .class, .class to non-optimized machine code, and you also have to do that interpretation in real time. So that's the semi-interpreted mode, which, as we seem to be finding, is going to end up at the moment about possibly 5 times slower on iterative codes than the best compilers. But when I say that we're going to use Java to do scientific computing, we're going to use the bottom route. We're going to use native compilers for Java, and or we're going to use Java front ends to manipulate existing Fortran and C codes, which are going to run as highly optimized standard libraries. So either use Java and that's in the near term clearly going to be the method of choice. So that I call the Java wrapper approach. You build Java, you notice that most of your work as a scientific programmer is doing I/O and screwing around and stuff like that. You use Java to do that because Java's better at that, and you use your existing C and Fortran to run the so-called native classes. That doesn't seem to me to make a lot of sense. The whole purpose of the universal bytecode is to make it universal, not to be able to make a fortune for Sun so that you would be forced to use that as the machine that had that machine code. If you want to build if you want to run Java on your toaster or your set-top box where everything's at a premium, that may be a very good idea. And I'm not saying there isn't a huge market for that, but I believe this combination, there is no reason why you can't build excellent Java compilers. Java is a perfectly reasonable language. It is actually easier than C++ to build good compilers for. I guess, all of this is going to happen. So one of the advantages of Java is its richness. It has a lot. It has managed to do reasonably well in a lot of areas, whereas other languages, say such as Fortran, are wonderful because of its language. It's very easy to produce highly optimized code for important scientific applications in Fortran, and so it has a particular feature. Java is many better than Fortran there, and probably maybe a little worse. But Java does excellently in a whole set of areas, which is why I think it's an excellent language. Next file. Alright, let's scoot down this one. So this demonstrates, no, sorry, I didn't mean that. Back to that previous one. Do next again. What happened to the one that just disappeared? Do previous. Question next. Okay, fine. Yeah, let's look at this one. Okay, let's
scroll it down.
Just scroll that down. This one you don't have, I believe. You may remember the previous one where my SGI was sitting here at 0.54 and the maximum over here was around 1, which is here. So I reran Dongar. I just went to the same page a couple of months ago, and now they have just-in-time compiler results on LIMPAC, and for LIMPAC, the best just-in-compiler results are now, I can't read it now, but it's over, I believe it's 13 megaflops on September 30th. And you might notice poor old SGIs are still sitting at half a megaflop. So the just-in-time compilers only run, I believe, on PCs at the moment.
There is just-in-time compiler for SGI, but it's not integrated with the browser.
Okay.
It's integrated with the Cosmos code.
All right. So this illustrates, of course, again, the sad conflict between the workstation world and the PC world. These advances are coming first on the PCs and then on the workstation world. So clearly, so here we have a factor of 10 improvement, and it's almost certainly, from our experience, going to be best on the Internet Explorer, because Netscape is behind at the moment in that arena. But now we're again within factors of 5 of best performance on LIMPAC for the semi-interpreted Java. And so this, remember, is in a time period which is quite small. There was only a few months difference between these numbers. Next file. All right, so I would not claim that the performance issues of the web are solved at all. They're very important. I do believe that there are not intrinsic performance problems with web technology that cannot be solved. That's my belief. I also happen to believe it's not a lot of point for us to work trying to solve them, because, like, say, we want to decrease the latency in the Java server. Well, we can go into Jeeves or some other server and tweak it up, but by the time we finish tweaking it, they would have changed that server anyway because the technology is evolving so fast. So my belief at the moment is that it's best to look at overall architecture and systems issues and assume that the world will solve the performance problems. Or if they don't, they'll stabilize the technology well enough that it makes sense to go in there and tune it. At the moment, this technology is changing and getting better so fast that I don't think it makes a lot of sense to put a lot of effort into tuning. Next file. So that file just discussed native classes. So that's, I guess this is what this says here. So one of the lessons from the fact that this technology is changing and is not terribly high performance at the moment is that there are two areas where these issues are not so important. The first is education, and the second is program development. So I would say the first obvious places to use these ideas are in those two arenas, using existing technology for production, because that's where you certainly need very high performance. Next file. So this file restates what I tried to emphasize before, that you should think of the I-Way, not the Internet, or the VBNS, not the Internet, or an ATM-connected PC cluster, not the Internet. That's going to be the implementation system for our any web computing activities we do. And if you like, sort of roughly what we're trying to do is the web has a wonderful, very loosely synchronized, coarse-grained type computing model. What we need to do is to sort of integrate into it the tight synchronization and the nifty algorithms that HPCC has produced. Next file. So here we're going to describe JavaScript. JavaScript is technically quite a useful language. So JavaScript, unlike Java, is fully interpreted. And so it's a very convenient way for rapid prototyping. It's obvious to me, at least I think it's obvious, that we need interpreted versions of Java. In fact, I have in a talk, I had a file which I forgot to put in this talk, which says that there is some sort of a natural, if you look at sort of a layered software model, at the very highest level where you're sitting there at your workstation, you don't want to be writing .java files, compiling the .class and downloading them. You want to be running at a scripted level, either graphically or equivalently, if you want in a more powerfully, some sort of fully scripted interpreted language. So we want at the top level a fully interpreted environment. Then we can have a semi-interpreted Java-like world. Underneath that, we can have these optimized libraries with native classes. So I believe there's a sort of very natural hierarchical model of which JavaScript is the only entry at the top for a fully interpreted world, but it's not aimed at full... The difference between JavaScript and Java is JavaScript's only aimed at document handling. It's not aimed at general computing. General comp like Java is. So I would view JavaScript as an important concept. Its current implementation is too limited, in my opinion, to survive a long way. Next file. All right. So the key, I've already illustrated the key advantage of JavaScript. And that is that all these buttons are client-side, because these are all built using JavaScript. Whereas normally, if you went through a server technology, this would have to send a message to a server, the server have to wake up and think, and send a message back to the client, and then something might happen. So this JavaScript is sitting there at the server, at the client, doing its thing. And there is a lot, I listened to a talk by somebody who built an education system using CGI scripts and claimed it was too slow because of simple things it got too slow a response. I believe anything, JavaScript has an excellent interface to HTML forms, and almost anything you do where you just need relatively modest computation, you can do with JavaScript without invoking any CGI scripts. Next page. This actually illustrates this general structure of web wisdom, which is I would claim to be an industry standard syntax of sort of using multi-framed displays. The sort of index frame here is on the other side from here, but so JavaScript allows you to build this sort of general capability where you have information in the middle, some index here, and some control buttons up the top there, which the more general example I could show you would have audio capability and carousel capability. You can see a carousel capability, etc. Next file. Yeah, let's skip that one. Next, but we've already seen that one. So these files here just illustrate that you can use this technology to build a whole set of user interfaces of this general type. This is a patient record database. Next file. Next one. I don't know how many of these we have. All right, so this one's actually a little more interesting. And Dave Warner will mention this one this afternoon. I view this as a reasonably significant application. So this is called CareWeb, and you will give it a great deal more information about CareWeb. The reason why I consider CareWeb pretty interesting is this combines several of our technologies. Namely, this actually, you may remember in the old days of the web, you send back and forth on you put ASCII text on a disk, and then you send that ASCII text to the client. Well, in this CareWeb application was built with the School of Nursing at Syracuse University and the local school district as a prototype prototype resource to support school nurses and allow them to essentially have a patient record database and to link through the web with both the hospital and the local School of Nursing. And this particular file here points out that essentially at the back end of this system here is a sort of typical modern information system in that it has no HTML pages. Everything is stored, in this case, an Oracle database. It can be in any of your favorite databases. So the entire information is stored in an Oracle database. When you click any buttons on this system, that request is sent to, in this case, a CGI script, which accesses the Oracle database. The Oracle database, in this case the language which we mentioned called PL/SQL, generates the text, the HTML, transmits it back to the client, and to make this life more complicated, it doesn't actually generate HTML, it actually generates JavaScript, and so it actually generates programming back to you, which then comes back to the client. So this is a pretty complex application where you actually do not have ASCII, pure ASCII text at any stage of the operation. So that, I would say, is today the state of the art of such an information system. You need JavaScript on the client side for rapid client-side manipulation because you're not going to go through this mess with the database every time you do anything. So you put everything you can. You can download options and all sorts of auxiliary information stored in the values of JavaScript variables, which you access client-side, and then you... And that allows you to produce, say, much better user interactions than you could without it. So, next file. This is probably yet enough. So this is a typical page generated from this system, which is some way through the interaction showing a particular. This one has 30. This particular Oracle application has 30 separate tables. Corresponding to the various entities involved. Next file. Well, here's Web Wisdom. Next file. We've already seen this. Alright, so if this particular file here, some of our technology that we're using here is developed in a contract for Rome Laboratory, which is developing a prototype command and control system using web technology. And which we would claim to be substantially lower cost than existing command and control technologies. And so you don't have to know much about command and control, but this is meant to be a reasonably faithful reproduction of the so-called Cheyenne Mountain Granite Sentry command and control interface. Next file, and it uses JavaScript. Next file. All right. So. What is JavaScript? So you can think of JavaScript. There was a part of Java I didn't talk about called the Abstract Windowing Toolkit, which is basically the library that allows you to build buttons and stuff like that and make them talk to each other. And what JavaScript has is essentially the capabilities of the Abstract Windowing Toolkit, except instead of being built on top of a Java client, it's built on top of a Netscape client. And so why is that a neat idea? Well, it may not be a neat idea if the Netscape client wasn't very good, but that the Netscape client comes with a lot of capabilities which we'd rather not build into every single one of our, build a giant Java applet to replace. This allows us a lot of the flexibility of Java in the user interaction, but keep all the wonderful capabilities of a Netscape client. And so that's why I said JavaScript has got it half right. It's fully interpreted, which we definitely want, but it only really got one feature of Java done well. The only important, whereas Java comes with a wonderful set of objects and classes and methods, JavaScript, it comes with a math class, a date class, and a document class. The document class is very sophisticated and has all the necessary capabilities to manipulate a Netscape document, including all the forms and everything like that. But that's all it does. It does not have an image class and stuff like that. So, whereas Java is a far richer and an order of magnitude more sophisticated language. But JavaScript is fully interpreted. Next file. Well, I have not tried it on the Internet Explorer. They claim they support JavaScript.
It works, of course.
It does work, yes. Marek's had some experience, so the answer is yes, but we haven't. I wouldn't guarantee that every feature of JavaScript runs the same way. Yes. I only guarantee this JavaScript runs on Netscape. All right. So we have to do Hello World when we do any programming language. So this shows you how you do JavaScript in an HTML page. You have this gobbledygook here, which is ingeniously put in there so that this can be ignored by people, by browsers that don't understand JavaScript, and can be interpreted JavaScript-enabled browsers. So this looks like a comment. Because of this, it looks like a comment to old browsers and looks like JavaScript to new browsers. And I mentioned the object called document, so there's an object called document in JavaScript, and it has a method called writeLM, which says write followed by a line feed. And so here you just have, so this is sort of interesting, it shows that you have real programming intermixed with your text. So this HTML page just has programming in it, which in this case here is saying go to the document object, which is the current document, write onto that document the string h1 hello world angle / h1 angle. So it actually writes out it. So all this five lines are equivalent just to this argument here. So this is not a useful program, but it illustrates the nature of JavaScript. Next file. All right. I'm going to stop. I think I meant to stop at 10. As we started late, I'm going to stop at 10:15, which will allow me to finish JavaScript. Seems to be 10. All right. So this is the general syntax. Next file. All right. So here's a very useful type of JavaScript capability. In various tags, you can put a new attribute called onClick. So when we click on this particular thing, which is a button, in this case here, it says onClick equals compute this.form. So it says invoke the JavaScript function called compute, which then does some stuff. It can do whatever you like. So it's a function. So this allows you to take buttons and make them do anything you want. They just invoke functions. So when you click the next, when Michael clicks the next button up there, that next button is carefully looking up the URL of the next file and ordering it to be loaded into this place. Next file. And so that's the answer here. All right. Next file. hopefully all right. So here's another, the final example I think I want to do, which shows you some of the capabilities you can do. Namely, suppose you want to write an image file like this. This particular persuasion foil is stored on disk with a particular height and width. Now, when I'm displaying it on this SGI, I want to make it larger than the default value because this has high resolution. When I want to display it on a PC, 800 by 600 screen, I want to make it smaller. So the way I do that is that I have in the HTML page that's downloaded here, this line, effectively this line here, it says the image tag width equals a JavaScript variable called image width, which here is called image width. In this example here, I just defined image width to be 600, which is pixels at the top there, but actually in this Web Wisdom system, image width is read in from a file or printed, entered in by the user, so you can dynamically change, in this case here, the size of the image, so you can adjust your presentation to the screen of choice. So that's a typical example of JavaScript. You can produce parameterized HTML, which can be on the fly. Parameterized, they can be computed, although this doesn't do it. Actually, I realized yesterday what it should do is it knows the size of the screen. It should actually optimize there. You could do some optimization. Next file. All right, so we'll stop there. One thing, I'll just do a demonstration to show you what JavaScript can do. So I pointed out that one of the reasons I like this technology is that it allows one to reuse this one's work technology for one's family. So what I did was take this technology we now see for displays and reused it for the family photo album. You notice this technology allows you to... But this is a JavaScript program which essentially allows you to build general hierarchical trees of information, which in the case I would claim to be a generally useful capability. They were in family photo world, and I don't know... So here's a particular, so basically this just manipulates, we can leave some random picture there, that's not a very good picture. So anyway, this shows you how you can, so this JavaScript is manipulating through this this world. If I go back up here to foil world, get back to the original foil. And JavaScript has got a bunch of variables which keeps track of all these URLs so that you can live in different worlds at the same time and move back and forth. And they're just done with trivial variables holding locations of where you are so that you can build up a complex world with lots of different entries, with different positions in different worlds and move back and forth between them. So that's all done client-side. So that's a typical thing you can do with JavaScript. And now you're meant to go and have your coffee. I'm sorry.